This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Broadway icon John Cameron Mitchell channels the essence of his glam rock icon, Hedwig and the Angry Inch, for one night only at Arts Centre Melbourne this July. So put on some makeup, turn up the A-track and pull the wig down from the shelf. John Cameron Mitchell, July 10 at Arts Centre Melbourne. Book now. Joy sponsor.
Here's another Saturday Magazine podcast brought to you by Joy sponsor, Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
This is Saturday Magazine.
Now, we've actually got a very full studio, Tass. We've got Tass and Macca. We've got Anna Brown from the Human Rights Law Centre. We've got Misha Ketchell from The Conversation. We've got Senator Dean Smith. Oh, my God.
And, of course, we've got Dylan and Fiona.
Dylan on the buttons and Fiona on the keyboard. Welcome, Anna. How are you?
Everyone in the room.
Oh, good. Hang on. We'll turn your microphone on.
I'm well.
Good. We were... I know... Misha and Dean and myself and Tess, we're talking about religious freedom, but I know that the Human Rights Law Centre has made a submission to the Religious Freedoms Inquiry. We'd like you to share with us some of the nature of that submission, if you can.
Sure. And I should say, we also have been working with LGBTI groups to make sure that we, I guess, put the best evidence forward towards the panel. So we assembled... transgender groups, people from faith-based communities that are LGBTIQ identifying, and LGBTI health experts to make sure that the panel had the full exposure to all of the wealth of information and knowledge from within the LGBTI community, because I think what the evidence shows us is that we do have good religious freedom in this country. We certainly don't need laws that wind back equality for LGBTI people, and I think that's the real threat and risk this inquiry represents for our communities.
So, Anna, we were debating earlier on, where is the evidence? Is there any evidence that religious freedoms are, in fact, been impacted? What have you been able to establish, and can you add or shed any light to that point of view?
Well, certainly... they haven't been impacted by the changes to the Marriage Act from last year. I think what we're seeing this year is that, you know, hundreds, I think thousands now, of happy couples have been married in front of their friends and family, and that's a wonderful thing for Australians to witness. What we haven't seen is the sky fall in and all of the ridiculous claims that the No Side made last year coming to fruition. I think we could have a bit of fun with that, but I'll be the serious one. We have this inquiry, though, and there are some legitimate points that are raised. We don't have a federal anti-discrimination law for people of faith. But I should point out that any law that protects religious people from discrimination also needs to protect people that have non-religious beliefs as well. So that sometimes gets lost in the debate. And we do already have protections in the Fair Work Act and most states and territories. So whilst there's a gap, it's not a huge gap, but certainly something that I support changing. But what we need to make sure is that any moves to protect religious freedom don't come at the expense of the equality for other communities, including ours, because we already have exemptions in discrimination laws that go too far. So a key thrust of our submission was these exemptions need to be wound back, particularly when you're talking about government-funded services.
And, you know, Dean spoke about it earlier, Misha spoke about it, you spoke about it. There's one word here that's recurring: evidence. Show us the evidence that religious freedom is... or that we need to legislate for greater religious freedom, that religious freedom is under threat. I often say it's a bit like the government's having an inquiry into the Franchising Act. The Franchising Act protects the franchisor and the franchisee. Our current laws do protect the institutions of religion, and they protect people who want to practice that religion. So there's nothing to see here. There's no evidence that, you know, this particular franchise needs to be fixed.
Yeah, well, I think, and to Philip Ruddock's credit, he has had a focus on demonstrable evidence in his public comments about the inquiry. So I think all contributors to that debate have been put to their proof. And what I'm hoping to see in the report is a good assessment of the evidence that was put forward to the inquiry. And that's not just people's opinions about what may or may not be the case in 2018.
One of the challenges here is, and you know, I'm not a fellow traveller, I'm not an atheist, I'm not an agnostic, I'm totally disinterested in it as a belief.
Is that a new category, Macca?
So somewhere in there. But you know, I have a number of friends that are people that hold a significant faith. And the message that comes to me from them is that they're actually quite disturbed by this discussion because they don't have an issue with practicing their religion. They don't feel that they're under threat. They say it's the same as everything else. There's a few ratbags on the fringes on all sides of the argument that actually want to change the current laws. But of the dozens of people of faith that I know that I've spoken to, not one of them, and they are from the left and they are from the right, has said, well, I actually think we need a change here. I'm quite comfortable with how I practice my faith and how my religion is protected.
Yeah, I think that's right, Macca. I think there's a large, vast, silent majority of people of faith who are very content and feel very happy practicing their faith in this country, and that's what we see every day, everywhere. We are a successful, multi-faith, multicultural community in Australia. Probably the worst examples of religious intolerance that we see are unfortunately practiced by people against people of Muslim Muslim people or people of the Islamic faith. And there's some horrific instances of Islamophobia, of public violence and harassment, and that's the sort of content that I hope the inquiry will be focusing on, as well as measures to reduce that sort of harassment. That said, it was a legally focused inquiry, so I think there's a limit to what it will be recommending.
So do you have any insights as to what we can expect out of this inquiry?
Well, I don't know what's in the report.
Another one.
But certainly I felt that we had the opportunity to speak to the panel, and whilst there was no person that identified as LGBTIQ on the panel, we had people like Father Frank Brennan who have a strong track record in carefully considering some of the issues around balancing competing rights. But then we also had people with not as much knowledge of the issues facing our communities. So we did feel that it was a big education exercise for us. So my hope is that education got through to the panel, but we'll have to wait and see what's in the report. I do think there's already been some commentary in the media about the content, and it's in the Australian today as well, the calls for that federal anti-discrimination law that protects people of faith from discrimination. It's something the Human Rights Law Centre supported in its submission. We agree that there is a gap. There's nothing. If that was the outcome of the report, I think that's
not a bad thing.
That's a very reasonable outcome.
And Anna, do you think that this debate is again raising the issue of the need of a national human rights charter?
Absolutely. I would say that because I'm from the Human Rights Law Centre. But I think it, you know, almost every instance of unfairness that you saw and sort of raised in the inquiry, if we had a proper functioning human rights legal framework in this country and a charter of rights or a bill of rights that ensured that when government enacts laws and when it enacts policies and when it makes decisions that it respects the rights of all people, then we'd prevent a lot of these issues from starting in the first place.
What a wonderful concept.
Yeah. When human rights are protected in the law, they're more likely to be realised on the ground. That's what experience shows.
Can I ask Dean, you know, you're very, very close to this issue in the Parliament and in the party. When this, how did this come about? What was the reasoning for doing this? What was the motivation for doing this? What was the trade-off for doing this?
Doing the religious review? Well, the religious review mechanism was something that I absolutely supported because I think it did provide a way for some people's nervousness or anxiety about legislating for same-sex marriage, those issues that weren't directly related to that and to the bill, but did sort of capture some of that anxiety. It did allow those issues to be exported, put into a process headed by someone like Philip Ruddock, who Philip is very experienced in these things, and the experience that Anna has shared is what I've heard from other submitters. The committee has been available. It's been open to the different perspectives. So I think it'll be a very considered report. So I'm someone who supported the religious review mechanism. And Anna's right. There's a couple of things that people should keep a very clear eye on or open eye towards when the report does come out. What is the evidence? Because if there's no evidence in the report, it means that there was no evidence provided through the submission phase. Secondly, we should be resolute is that progress in this country in regards to religious freedom should not come at the expense of the LGBTI community or anti-discrimination laws generally, because they have worked very, very well, very, very well. And thirdly, I would say is calmness, consideration. These are difficult things to legislate for. There'll be a legislative process. There'll be a committee hearing. So if we do go down we do sort of import religious belief, for example, into our anti-discrimination framework, it'll be considered, it'll be well thought out. Nothing is going to happen quickly.
If there is legislation and you don't agree with it, are you going to channel some of your colleagues on energy that say that you would cross the floor?
As Anna knows better than most, some state law does actually provide protections to religious belief.
Yeah.
So some people will be arguing, well, let's have every state law incorporate this view, or let's have a national law. I don't think this is an issue I'll need to be crossing the floor on. Not at all. I mean, I'd like to think, Mac, I've got a strong record of sort of being clear about my convictions.
Oh, no.
But I think this is actually progressing quite comfortably at the moment. Yeah.
You are listening to Saturday Magazine with Macca and Tass, and our studio guest, Anna Brown from the Human Rights Law Centre, Misha Ketchell, who's the editor of The Conversation, and Senator Dean Smith, all the way from WA. Macca.
And I just wanted to say how wonderful it is and how great it is to be able to have a conversation based on respect and, you know, that we are all independent. I'm a great supporter of the conversation. I admire what Dean does in the Parliament. I admire what Anna does in her work. And we're giving a voice to all these different views with respect, and that is what makes this show worth the effort.
Well said, Macca. So in front of us, just to change the subject, in front of us we have a full-page ad in one of the daily papers. I believe it's been paid for by the Human Rights Law Centre. Anna, could you describe the ad for us?
I think it's the Saturday paper.
Yes, it is.
It's the Saturday paper.
Yeah, who they've published a series of ads for us, and it was to coincide with our end of financial year fundraising appeal. This particular ad, and they're all calls to action around injustices in this country and supporting our organisation to help remedy them. This particular advert says, religious schools are allowed to expel students because they're gay, lesbian, bi or trans. Let's change this. Help us ensure anti-discrimination laws apply to all of our schools. And that's talking about our work on the Religious Freedom Review, as well as state-by-state work to remove or narrow the exemptions available for religious schools and other organisations, which, I mean, I think it's a no-brainer. If you've got a vulnerable kid in school, that they should be supported and safe in that environment, not subject to discrimination.
And it's important to remember that state law in some states allows this.
Yes.
Well, including here in Victoria.
Yes.
Yeah, Victoria's are actually among the worst.
I know.
And there have been attempts to amend that, and of course they haven't been successful. So could something like the outcome of this Religious Freedoms Review result in a national approach?
Well, what happens with anti-discrimination law, not to get boring discrimination law lawyer on everyone, but we do see incremental change, and every time a jurisdiction reforms and reviews its discrimination laws and improves them, that sort of represents the new high water mark. So what we've seen is uneven but always forward progress in protections. So for instance, our Protections for LGBTI people nationally protected intersex people for the first time.
Yeah.
So next time, for instance, the Northern Territory is conducting a review, and it's already signalled that it could be looking at some of these exemptions and narrowing them. So every time we move forward in any jurisdiction, we take a step forward, which is a good thing. I think what we'll see out of this national review is that it'll influence Commonwealth law, most importantly. That's where it's really targeted. But we could see a flow-on effect with states deciding, for instance, the New South Wales Anti-Discrimination Act is over 40 years old and has terms like transsexual in it, really outdated language. It doesn't protect bisexual people from discrimination because it just focuses on homosexuality. So when New South Wales gets around to reviewing its laws, which is hopefully soon, it will be taking a leaf out of the Commonwealth's book and looking at the work in this inquiry.
That sounds really like a great outcome. Dean, do you have any thoughts about that?
I've got a very clear thought that, you know, schools are a place of learning and safety for young people. I don't think that anyone should be expelled because they might be exploring their sexuality, or that they might actually be gay or lesbian or transgender, etc. I would have thought that religious organisations are interested in the welfare of children and helping children make responsible decisions about their future and about their learning choices. So expelling someone from a classroom and from a school environment. And of course, there's two things here. There's the message it sends to children that are not gay and lesbian, that somehow there's something wrong with this, and I absolutely reject that. And secondly, each of us knows that the journey we take individually to understand, accept our sexuality is still a very, very long and lonely journey, no matter how accepting the world might look outside of that. And so anything that makes that journey more painful for young people should absolutely be discouraged. And
Dean, the very fact that this exists, that this legislative provision exists, that allows a denominational school to actually remove a student because of their gender and sexuality identity, is a threat to the health and welfare of that child.
Agreed. And as Anna has said, we are making progress in this country. I'd like to think, Anna, that the progress that we make over the next few years will be much more quicker, much more effective, because we've got the resounding outcome of the postal survey. We've got this very, very broad acceptance of same-sex marriage in our country now. We saw that in the survey result. We saw that in the outcome of the parliamentary debate. So I'm hoping that the pace of change, the pace of acceptance, is faster going forward than it has been looking back.
Misha, we haven't heard from you for a while. What are your reflections on this topic?
Well, I mean, I totally agree with what you said, Dean, but I'm just wondering whether, you know, given the, you know, review of religious freedoms, whether people would see a change in the rules around this as an encroachment on religious freedom. And, I mean, my own view would be that the right of a young person to have access to an education free of discrimination to me would trump the right of the school, or the argument
that
the school might make.
I wish you wouldn't use that word, Trump, though.
Okay, sorry. Would override.
Not capital, you know, T, Trump.
The right of a school to say it wants to discriminate amongst students on the basis of their sexuality. However, I'm just wondering if there would be people putting a counter-argument there.
But I think, Misha, in your comment, you're assuming that there is a unified, united, unanimous view in religious organisations about this issue. I mean, to have got the survey result we got, lots of people of faith had to say, yes, I support same-sex marriage, and more important than that, I don't buy into these arguments that the no case put. So I'm hoping, actually, that what we've seen, that the idea that religious institutions might have a united view around these issues, I'm not speaking authoritatively, but I think that's going to be very interesting, because I think the parents of young LGBTI people, the parents of even older LGBTI people, know that this is not necessary. You're not actually protecting. Also, this is an interesting. Who are you protecting by having a law like this?
And I would say these schools, these institutions receive taxpayers' money, right? Now, as a taxpayer, I say I don't want my taxes used to discriminate against my community. And on the other side of the argument, people who think this is okay would say they don't want their taxes used to support or promote my community. Really simple. Let's look at how much money, how much taxpayers' money goes to religious institutions. Let's see how much taxpayers' money goes to support my community. And perhaps the answer, Dean, is all of us in our taxes get the right to say 2% of the total tax we pay, we can direct that to an organisation. Germans do it in a way with their church tax. So if I don't want to support this sort of discrimination with my taxes, then I should be allowed to. And equally, I can divert a portion of my tax to support organisations and causes, legitimate organisations. What do you say to that?
Well, I'm definitely on the tax reform bandwagon.
Good, let's
yeah,
do it.
Absolutely. But I approach it this way. I would like to lower the burden. Well, we've had some recent success in that. I like the idea of lowering the tax burden on individuals and businesses, so that way you have more of your own income to decide how you might like to support particular causes and particular charities and those sorts of things. So that's how that's my preference for approaching these sorts of issues. I also like the idea of states collecting more tax, not the Commonwealth and the state collecting more tax, but states collecting more tax, because it gives individual taxpayers in those states greater ability to influence the law that directly govern them and their communities.
Yeah. Do you want your taxes going to support religious organisations that discriminate against our community, Dean?
I'd prefer not.
Mm. Okay.
Yep.
Misha?
I think the point you're making is a really good one, which is that education is the province of the secular state. Education is a human right, and people have a right to be educated without discrimination. And so, you know, if you did sort of conceive of it as a conflict of some sort of values, that there's a religious freedom question here, again, I would say the values of the secular state would be the predominant values that you would have to look at, and obviously protecting those individual people from type of discrimination.
I think it's pretty
clear on that basis. I guess just the interesting question is, we're having this discussion about religious freedoms now, and this is an example where people who are concerned about religious freedoms could see rules around this as a further encroachment, or this idea of sort of, you know, being told how to run their schools. I think the counter argument is that if you're part of a religious organisation running a school, you're doing that under the auspices of the state, and the state has to sort of license that.
And I think when it comes down to it, and I mean, Dee made the point earlier, I think a lot of religious organisations, including schools, are doing the right thing.
Yes,
a lot of them
absolutely.
Are treating LGBTI
absolutely.
Students, young people, their customers in aged care or whatever the industry, with respect and decency. But what we don't want is the legal framework that they're operating under is to, for that legal framework to authorise poor treatment, to authorise unsafe environments for students. And I think we should be able to, as a society, and our government should be able to find a way of allowing for religious freedom to be exercised, allowing for religious schools, because part of the UN covenant in this area is very strong on allowing religious communities to teach their religions. So we need to support that. But it can't come at the expense of causing harm to vulnerable young people. Mm. And it doesn't have to be that way.
And the other thing I would add, I've seen this particularly in Western Australia, the proliferation of faith-based schools have given parents greater education choices. So they are able to sort of choose to send their children to a wider variety of different sorts of schools, because we have seen more educational choices. So, but I just reinforce the earlier point that I think that many religious schools, many teachers themselves, would want to put the care and protection of children foremost in their mind.
We're going to go to a very short break, but I just want to say this. Everyone in our community who supported Joy during Radiothon, thank you, you kept us on air. Also in the community that have supported the Human Rights Law Centre, and they achieved their goal in their appeal. If you don't support the conversation, don't read it for free, right? A few dollars, every little bit you do contributes to independent quality journalism, so please support it. It's important. Believe me, when it's not there, you'll miss it. And Dean, I want to thank you for giving your time this morning, but for the work you've done, for the advocacy you do in the Parliament. You should be proud to call yourself a Liberal, because you actually are a Liberal.
Thanks very much, Macca. Thank you.
There endeth the sermon. Sorry, Misha.
Thank you. That's great. I've got nothing to add.
You are listening to Saturday Magazine with Macca and Tass, and we have Anna Brown from the Human Rights Law Centre and Senator Dean Smith from WA in the studio. Macca.
You know, doing the show is always fun, but, you know, having a discussion, okay, granted, with like-minded people, but actually being able to have a civil discussion about issues that are important to us and reach some agreement. Compromise isn't a group of people all agreeing to do something just so they can agree. It is actually about giving some ground and considering the other position, something that I should try sometime, Tass. But it has been a great pleasure to have Anna in. You're not in here often enough, Anna.
Oh, I'm always happy to come in.
It's
down the road.
It's great. The work that the Human Rights Law Centre does is significant. It makes a difference. It continues to make a difference. It made a difference in the marriage equality discussion, as did Dean's contribution, which was he believed in, and it was a courageous position, and I supported that fully. And I know a lot of politicians, but there aren't a lot of politicians I admire. Dean is one of the politicians that I admire, because he stands up for what he believes in and what is right. And that is why, Dean, you get time on this show.
Because, well, it's great to be here, Macca.
Because it's important to our community. And it's, as Michael Kroger said to me, it's actually important that Liberals get to talk to other Liberals on air on this station. And I believe in that.
There you go. So Macca, that's...
You've been endorsed by Michael Kroger, there you are.
Well, if I might just sort of, in this sort of bouquet baton relay, just while I've got Anna right next to me, I'm going to say this publicly. Anna has heard me say it privately. But the success that the community achieved in the passage of an unamended bill, that same-sex marriage legislation, was in very, very large part to the great work that Anna did across the community, across the Parliament. Anna was supported by Corey and Lee, who are great. There's a great photo of the four of us, but I just wanted to publicly acknowledge the great stewardship, leadership, political acumen that Anna Brown demonstrated during that whole campaign.
Hear, hear.
So,
hear,
Anna,
hear.
Congratulations.
Hear, hear.
Yes.
I'm blushing.
Anna, we're all indebted to you. Thank you for your great work.
Dean, there's a picture of Dean wearing a T-shirt that apparently says Diana for Queen. I think...
taken in 1991, yeah, so you might
well
not recognise me.
Do a new version of that and replace it with Anna for Queen.
Anna for Queen, yeah.
Macca, we need to wind up.
We do. Thank you, everyone. Thank you for supporting Joy during Radiothon. Thank you for listening to Saturday Magazine. It's always a pleasure, Tass.
And you're on your own next week, because I'm on leave.
That's right, and I'm out there hawking for a bit of trade as a co-host. Thank you. Bye.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.